Welcome back, everyone. WIBG 398-1020. Welcome to Home Show. My name is Joe Griffies, here with Bill Davenport and Ralph Galati. Ralph, you on the line?
I'm here, buddy.
Great event the other night, wasn't it?
Yeah, most of it.
But
a good cause, though.
Well worth the trip to honor Bob Riley.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Yeah, that was great.
I've never attended an event that anybody was more deserving of a medal. Maybe maybe a Medal of Honor recipients, but what Bob does, nobody does. And prisoners of war, they took a beating for our country. They came home and, you know, they just thought, hey, go back to work.
Did a good job of making sure the audience knew what he really did behind the scenes. That was very nice, though.
Yeah, he took a guy out of a dumpster Christmas Eve morning, and the guy's now, a couple years later, living with his daughter and his grandchildren.
Who even thinks of that? I mean, who even thinks, I'm going to get out and go to the worst place in the city and take care of the most underserved people? And it's him. I mean, how many people do that?
Ralph, it went 14 miles from Margaret and Orthodox to Center City. They closed two or three L platforms because of the homeless. You couldn't get up the stairwells. They were all sleeping in there. They were doing drugs. Homeless, dirty, stunk, smelly, didn't have baths for months at a time. There was drug lords on every corner. Drugs were flowing. You could buy drugs easier than you could buy a Coca-Cola in that block. And he went amongst them. And he hugged them. And he gave them pretzels and water and socks and coats in the winter, and got them their health care benefits. And he was one of the main reasons why that area got cleaned up. Mm-hmm. Can't say much more than that. I mean, you know.
No.
And you were there, the accolades that he got. And,
well deserved, yeah.
Yeah. And compared to some of the other people that got the gold medal, that medal for Bob wasn't big enough.
No, you're right.
Yeah, we won't go there. But anyway, it was a great night. And Bill, the weather down here is freezing down here.
Yeah, I guess it is in your area, Ralph. But down here, it's going to be
right now. It's 15.
Yeah,
but a lot of wind makes it feel even worse.
Yeah, we have probably a day of wind, but another 4 or 5 days where it's going to be below freezing overnight. Of course, it is February, but this is it's unusual. We get them every so often.
Ralph, I ask you this question all the time. I'm being serious this time. You were in the Hanoi Hilton for 14 months. Bill and I were in Vietnam, so we're pretty familiar with the weather. Now, I was up in Pleiku in the Highlands, and at night it would drop down to 70, 75 degrees. And when it was 100, 105 during the day, you feel that difference. What was the temperature up there? I mean, you didn't have a blanket in your cell, did you?
No, we were basically living outside, but in the wintertime at night, it would get down into the 30s. It was pretty cold.
Now, what do you mean you're living outside?
I think the winds and stuff would come out over the mountains to the north from China, and it would just get really cold.
But what do you mean you were outside? You were in the Hanoi Hilton, the building, right? Or you were in
but there was no glass in the windows. I mean, they had openings with bars on it, but they were not protected from the elements. So
whatever temperature
was outside, same temperature inside.
Was there a roof?
Yeah, we had a roof, yeah.
And I'm sure it was all cement floors.
Everything was cement. Cement and cinder block, yeah.
So that makes it even colder.
Yeah, yeah. And all we had was a bamboo mat that kind of separated you from the cement. But that was it. I mean, it was, winter times were tough. I got to admit, they were really cold.
Did you ever put the bamboo mat on you as a blanket?
No, because you didn't want to stick to the cement floor. So,
yeah.
I mean, they gave us a thin blanket. I mean, it wasn't like we had nothing, but, you know, cold is cold. Okay, how many blankets you have on you when it's 35 or 40 degrees? It's cold.
Yeah, that's sad. But listen, we have a guy on. Jim, you with us?
Yes, I am, Joe. How you doing? Hi, Bill.
How
you doing, Jim?
And Jimmy, you're on with Ralph Galati. He spent 14 months in the Hanoi Hilton as a POW. His plane was shot down.
pretty impressive story I just heard.
Listen, I'm the guy made him. He went to prison camp. I'm the one made him popular when he came home. You know? I should have been your agent. I should have signed a contract with you, Ralph. But anyway, Jim Prendergast is the president of Veterans at the Elks in North Wildwood. And I don't know of another organization down here that opens their checkbook up as much and as fast and as often as the Elks does, Jim.
Well, thank you. And you know, it's a we're glad to be in a position that we can help any veteran, you know, that's in need. And it's good that we can pay back a little bit for what they've done for us.
And tell us a little bit about the project. I think you guys took two or three rooms under over in, is it Absecon, where they're taking converting a motel? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so it's called One Veterans Village in Absecon, and it's actually a lady by the name of Gladys that took her 401k money and bought a strip motel and started to renovate the motel room by room. And when we heard about that, we bought a room, and then we bought another room and another room. We ended up buying four rooms.
Hold on a minute. Are you at liberty to say how much the rooms were that you donated? And what you bought a room was, you took that room that had to be remodeled and built out again, correct?
That is correct. And you know, the beauty of it is, then a veteran gets to live there, you know, for, you know, the rest of his life. And if he can afford to pay, he affords to pay. And if he, you know, can't afford to pay, then Gladys and her team picks up the discrepancy. So they actually have, you know, like a two-room apartment that is theirs, and they live there with, you know, 15 or 20 other veterans. And it did cost us around $7,500 to renovate a room. So we are proud to have done four of those rooms. And then we also helped them, you know, they needed a new sprinkler system, so we just made another donation to help with the sprinkler system for the place. But if you ever get a chance, you know, just go there and visit. You know, ask to see Gladys, and it's just a good group of guys there. They come down to our Christmas party. They come down to our Veterans Day event, and we send them all, you know, Christmas gifts at Christmas and when we do Christmas in July. So it's just a really one of the best things we do.
Yeah, you just helped a vet. Was he a vet or just a family? I'm not sure. That had a fire.
Okay, so yes, so he is actually still active military, but himself, four children. One of the children has a pretty chronic disease that, you know, makes it very, very difficult. And so their house was totally burnt down, and they had to move into an apartment. And so while they're waiting on insurance, they still had to pay their mortgage, and the apartment was costing them $3,300 a month. So we recommended to our trustees at the Elks that we pay $3,300 for, you know, 1 month's rent for that family. When we brought that for approval to the general meeting, that amount got kicked up to $10,000. So three or four of us drove up there last Saturday, actually, you know, and presented that family with a check. So, you know, that'll help them out. They got a long road to hoe. You know, obviously, you know, they lost everything, and they do have an insurance, and they will get their house rebuilt. But, you know, having four kids and a dog, you know, in a small apartment, and then trying to replace all those things that aren't replaceable, you know, that $10,000 will help them out a little bit.
I'm sure it will. Hold on one minute. We got to take a fast 1 minute break. And if you're listening to Welcome Home Show, we'll be right back.
The sat talking with his dad. He said the teacher pulled out a book, taught us all about the flag, about the red, white, and blue, and how each color was defined, and why we stand hand over heart, pledge allegiance every time. His dad pulled out a box with a folded flag and said, trust me, son, it means way more than that. It's more than a flag, stars and stripes. Yeah, it weighs for the ones who died and gave their lives. You and I could live our own. It stands for truth. It stands for colors don't run, and to this day carry sacrifice and scars. Every stripe and star it has, we might know the definition, but the truth is it's more than a flag. Second, dropping bombs to lessen the threats he had to fight. Got sent home in 71 with one less leg and a purple heart. He used to say, I gave some gave all. That's what we're fighting for. They gave your grandma this box on the day he passed. Fired 21 shots and fought it up that flag. It's more than a flag, stars and stripes. Yeah, it weighs for the ones who died, gave their lives. You and I could live our own. It stands for truth. It stands for grace. These colors don't run, and to this day carry sacrifice and scars. Every stripe and star it has, you might know the definition, but the truth. Stripes, it weighs for the ones who died and gave their lives. You and I can live our own. It stands for truth. It stands for grace. These colors don't run empty this day. Carry sacrifice and scars. Every stripe and star it has. You might know the definition, but the truth is it's more. You might know the definition, but the truth is it's more than a flag.
Welcome back, everyone. WIBG 398-1020, the Welcome Home Show. Now, to get on to the main subject that we're going to have a lot of Elks people on. We're going to have a lot of Wildwood, Ernie on, Lou on, a lot of people from some Jour flag, flag makers from all over the country on. And tell us about Flags of Liberty.
All right, so Flags of Liberty is coming up on Friday of Memorial Day weekend, May the 22nd. It starts with check-in at 8 o'clock in the morning, and the service starts at 9. We will have a number of good musicians there that play while people check in. We'll have a couple of speeches, but the main event is unfurling 250 veterans casket flags at the same time. It is what Memorial Day weekend is all about. You know, it's words can't describe the feeling when you see that many families holding the casket flags of their loved ones, while the names of each of the past veterans is raised, is read aloud, and seeing the other, 250 flags unfurl. Now, this is our 10th year. This is our 10th year for Flags of Liberty. Last year, we had about 140 families, honor their veterans. And this year, because of the 250th anniversary of the United States, our goal is to get at least 250 families, there to unfurl the flags. Following the ceremony, we have a light buffet where everybody gets to congregate, and we have a band playing military songs. It's just a wonderful couple hours, and probably the best way you could possibly start Memorial Day weekend.
Actually, Bill, what's your name? It's an orchestra from down here.
John Waters Band.
Band. They're more like an orchestra than they are a band.
John Waters Community Band.
Yeah, fabulous. Like 25 people?
Well, they have a variety of people, and it depends on who's available, because they're all volunteers. They don't get paid.
Yeah.
And they play throughout the year at various community events. They at the Rotary Club, Rotary Park in Cape May all summer, various churches, the PAC Center in Middle Township, the county zoo, they're just everywhere. So they also, whatever the topic is or the event, they ask their volunteers to come in, but they probably have 50 people that are available at some point, but they usually put about 20 to 25 on stage.
But then again, with the, and I think we're going to have close to 400 or better flags, because the price is right this year, and I just think with this being the country's birthday, and you put it all together, we're also going to have the POW/MIA original flag that was made by Mary Helen Huff. Susie, Mary's daughter, was 2 years old when her father got shot down over to North Vietnam. Ralph, how old was your daughter when you got shot down over Vietnam?
6 days.
6 days.
Oh, my God.
6 days.
Well, as you well know, the real burden is on the family.
Yes.
We're okay. We're kind of messed up, but the families had no idea where you are, if you're dead, you're alive, you got brand new babies, you're trying to, handle finances. The families really suffer a lot, whether you are in a deployment, whether you're shot down, whether you're missing.
And the families think the worst. They think the worst.
They do. And it's that uncertainty and everything else is it's really hard on them. So they do sacrifice a lot.
And the reason I brought you and your daughter up was because when Mary Helen Huff got news about her husband, she made the POW/MIA banner to hang in front of the door when her kids went out to church, to school, to play. They would see the banner, think of their dad, touch it, and then go outside. And that is the banner she's going to bring that actually went to. Is Bob on? Bob's on the phone, and in flag company in New Jersey made the first POW/MIA flag. But the reason we brought up about your daughter and how old, young she was, George, Mary Huff had 5 children. The youngest was 5 weeks. The oldest was 9. And Susie, that's coming to Wildwood on the 22nd, was 2 years old then. She's a spokesperson, and she's bringing the flag out of, I think, Knoxville, Kentucky Museum, where her parents lived, and donated the flag there. She's going to borrow it and bring it. And we're also going to have this on your flag that we're going to bring Bob up. But Bob is with Anna Flag Company. They've been around for about 500 years. They're right here in New Jersey, and they have the honor of making the first POW/MIA flag, and they have the honor of making the Saint George flag that flew at 10 countries, 26 overseas cemeteries, Guam, Wake, Normandy, Manila, Philippines. It came back after flying 3 days at each spot, visited the five territories in the Pacific, came back to 3 days on Hawaii. Now it's touring the United States, and that flag will also be on May 22nd, flying behind the Vietnam Wall on the flagpole. So we're going to have the opening up of the at least 250. I was corrected, Jim. I'm told by all these flag companies. I must have talked to 50 flag companies. We got two or three coming on every week till from now till May 22nd, and they all refer to it as a burial or an interment flag.
Okay.
The flag industry doesn't like using the word casket flag, but people know what the term casket flag means. And so we're going to have the casket flag, the interment flag, the burial flag, casket flag being opened up, 250, 300, 400 of them. We'll know that day how many. We're going to have the original POW MIA flag, and we're going to have the San Jose flag. And when that flag is done in Wildwood, if it doesn't have to go visit any more of the original 13 colonies, it will then be taken down to Washington, and whatever remaining days between then and the 4th of July, it'll fly at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, the Women's Memorial, the Library of Congress. It'll fly a day at each place, and then it'll be presented, I think. We haven't finalized it, but it'll be presented to the president, and hopefully he puts it in the rotunda as the American birthday flag. Ralph, it'll be a pretty interesting, and I know you said you're going to try and hope and come down. You'll be a representative for POWs that day. And
I'm very much looking forward to it. Absolutely.
Maybe you'd be Bill, he'd be a good one to hoist the POW flag up.
Sure.
Put that on, you know? And we probably have a few POWs in the area. Maybe. I know Vince Pales passed away, but...
Yeah, all 11 of our World War II POWs have passed.
Yeah, we get Dave Drummond. Dave and Jill will come down. They're only an hour right away, and that would be great. And then I think, Jimmy, we're going to have the mayors, maybe of Wildwood, North Wildwood and Wildwood, hoist the American flag up.
Good. We have enough mayors, that's for sure.
Yeah, we do. They'll all be there too, trust me. That'll be great. Know what we ought to do to make money? Charge for photo ops. We'll make $1 billion that day. You know, everybody wants to be here with a photo op. But anyway, we're even prepared if the weather's bad. Jim, why don't you talk a little bit about the backup plan?
Yep. So the backup plan, we won't be able to unfurl every single flag, but we will line up inside the convention center, along the glass windows, all the way to the ocean and back. We will unfurl the flags on the outside perimeter, and everyone else will hold their flags inside that group, and we'll still do the music, the speeches, and the ceremony that we were going to do outside. Now, hopefully, last year the weather held, it is May at down the shore, so we know what the weather can be, but, hopefully that will hold up and we'll be able to do that. Now, one thing before we forget, just wanted to point out that if you want to, hold one of your veterans' flags in this, pre-register, go to www.wildwoods.nj/flags of liberty. But you don't have to spell out flags of liberty, just www.wildwoods.nj/FOL. And that will bring you to the site. And anyone that registers gets a t-shirt with the veteran's name and branch of service on it, and then they get 4 invites to the buffet afterwards.
I had a question, Jim, before we go any further. Say a person wants to do, they'll get 1 free t-shirt. Can they buy extra ones with their dad or their mom's name on the back of it?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They will. They'll be able to go online and say, "Hey, my Uncle George, we're bringing his flag, but there's five family members that want to with one Uncle George's name on the back of their shirt." So they'll get one, but be able to buy four more additional shirts.
Yeah, if you want to, yeah, there is a fee for buying additional shirts, but anybody that registers gets. You know, gets one shirt with the veteran's name and his branch of service on the back of it.
Yeah, that's cool. That's good. I think that's really important.
And again, thank you, Joe, to you and to Horizon Blue Cross, because they made a large donation that makes, the T-shirts, the commemorative pin, and the buffet free this year. So we really appreciate that.
Well, that's a special gift. That, you know, the 250th birthday doesn't come around every Memorial Day, you know? And I'll be honest with you. I can't think of a better town than in the Wildwoods to celebrate this Memorial Day, whether it's North Wildwood, Wildwood, Wildwood Crest, East Wildwood, Upper Wildwood, Downer Wildwood. There's so many Wildwoods you don't know. But, Bill, what is it, Nine Mile Island?
Five Mile Beach is a nickname for the island.
Yep.
It's actually a little bit longer. And on the island itself, there's four municipalities, and just behind it, and the only accessible way is through Wildwood, is the fifth community.
Listen, we're going to go a little break. Jim, you could stay on a few more minutes. I want to introduce you to Bob from Annan Flag Company, and Ralph, stay on with us. You're listening to Welcome Home.
It stands for what's right. It stands for the free. It stands for every small town kid who ever had a dream. All the ones who left their homes and never made it back. That's why I stand for this flag. Yeah, that's why I stand for this flag.
Bob Caggiano, based in Roslyn, New Jersey, is currently the Vice President of Sales of Annan Flag Company. Annan Flag Makers. Bob holds a 1971-1973 business in marketing at Fairleigh Dickinson University Metropolitan Campus with a robust skill set that includes advertising, sales, management, marketing, sales, new business development, and more. Bob has four emails and three mobile phones at his company. Bob, are you with us?
I am here.
I didn't beat your name up too bad, did I?
No, you did a good job. I had to put you back on speaker because I couldn't quite hear you.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah, you're coming over fine. So how long have you been? About 3 or 4 weeks at Annan Flag Makers? How long have you been with them?
Yeah, let's see, 50 years this year. How about that?
God bless you. Good for you.
Yeah, I started when I was 2 years old.
And Jim Prendergast is on the phone with us. He's the president of the Elks, and they're the ones that are really running the Flags of Liberty. And then on with us is a guy that I'm sure you made many, many flags for. Ralph Galati spent 14 months in the Inouye Hilton as a prisoner of war.
Okay.
Tell us about Bill. Bill, you put out with the show lineup that you sent out to a lot of people. You had a picture of the Annan Flag Company, and we talked to Bob before the show. Bob, tell us where that building was and the size of that flag.
I'm not exactly sure the size of it, but it was the Hudson Department Store in Detroit. And I don't know what the size of it was. I think it was first put up there about 1920.
Yeah, I think there was a number 80 by 80.
Yeah, well, the Hudson. I looked at the pictures of the Hudson Department Store, which is a very big store. It equals Wanamaker's or Litz Brothers in Philadelphia. And counting the stories, it looked like it could have been about 70 or 80 feet high and maybe 100 feet long.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
I was actually going to guess it's like about 180 by 120, but I'm not sure. Sorry about that.
That's all right. They caught you off guard. I looked at it. It really looked neat there because we do that down in the Wildwood area. We have a 30 by 60 flag. We during the Run to Remember, we hang it over the high school building. It's a 3-story building. I said it's 30 by 60. And then at the Flags of Liberty, it'll be over the roof at the convention center, which could be seen for blocks around.
Yeah. The largest we make now is 30 by 60 feet. Anything larger, it's not conducive for us. You know, we're pretty much a production line house, and these very, very large flags have to be done in auditoriums and an open field, and we just don't have access to that. So we stop, we stop at 30 by 60 foot, which is still pretty large, 1,800 square feet. It's a big flag.
Bob, where do you make a lot of flags. You have your headquarters is here in New Jersey, correct?
Yeah, we're headquartered in New Providence, New Jersey. We're founded in New York City downtown.
What year? What year were you founded?
Actually, Joe, it's a great question. We say 1847, but we really started in 1820, and they were ships chandlers, supplying ships with everything from a foodstuff to actually flags, and then in 1847. They became the Annam Flag Company. But if we go back as far as 1820, what's really interesting is that makes us, for what I believe, in the top 25 of the oldest and continuous companies in the U.S.
Yeah, companies, just not flag companies, companies.
Companies, I agree, 100%. I think Brooks Brothers is like 1818, and here we are at 1820, so... It's a company filled with a lot of history.
And now, and you have a couple factories. I mean, you're not still making these in your garage next to your house, are you?
No, not quite. So we have two factories in Virginia, one in Pennsylvania, one in Ohio, and one in Illinois. We own a couple other companies. And all our flags are 100% made in the USA. We're very, very proud of that.
I think that Ralph, isn't that fabulous? And Jim, I mean, just great.
That is great. Unbelievable.
Is your time of the year for now? Of course, when 911 happens, everybody's flying a flag off their car, off their house, off their porch, whatever. During the normal year, when there's not a catastrophe or we're not at war or whatever, which is not that often, we're a warring country. Is there a busier time of the year for flags?
The peak time of the year is April through July. It's not quite as seasonal as it used to be, but the busiest months are April through July. For us and our resellers. Of course, we're busy all year round. I mean, big box stores, we stop shipping them probably in April or May, but, we have to continue start producing on July 5th for the previous year because we couldn't possibly produce all the flags that were needed if we closed down in the slower months, September through December. So we're going, 12 months a year.
So you were present when I think you might even be on the board when Rommel Nicholas from the American president of the American Banner and Flag Association for America, he reached out to you to make the Saint-Jean flag. Am I correct?
Yes. There were two flags, and they're Rommel is from the National Flag Foundation in Pittsburgh. And so those two, so we supplied those two flags and they made the trip to all the American cemeteries in Europe and I guess in the Far East.
Yeah, wait a minute,
and
Bob.
I think
Bob,
those
Bob,
flags are back now.
Yeah, wait a minute. Hold on a minute. Doesn't everybody come to you and say, listen, I want you to make a flag because we're going to fly it in 10 countries, 26 overseas cemeteries, and 3 days in every state in America? Isn't that everybody's wish when they come to you to get a flag?
Probably so. But, Joe, the funny thing is, I was very involved with this flag from the beginning, but we're wholesale only. So a lot of times we don't even know where our flags are being flown. We know the ones, we knew our flags covered Lincoln's casket, in the train ride to Springfield, Illinois. That flag was actually in our office in early 2025. Unbelievable. I mean, just to think how old that flag was.
Wait a minute, how about the the flag that covered the casket when the Olympia bringing the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier of World War One home.
But you know what? Our flag has been all over. I mean, you know, they raised on Mount Suribachi, Omaha Beach, the moon, you know, carried on all various missions to the moon and circling the moon. And, you know, there's a lot of places that are, you know, our flags are flown in front of office buildings, corporations and schools. But, you know, Joe, maybe more importantly, maybe in front of millions of homes in the U.S., you know, because we sell millions a year. And so, I mean, it's just a wonderful, wonderful thing. I used to travel more so abroad, but, you know, when you get to a U.S. embassy and you see your flag there, you're like, okay, I'm safe and I'm home. You know, there's just something about seeing the U.S. flag being flown.
Bob, do we have any idea why they picked the colors red, white, and blue? There's not a lot of history of, like, even about Betsy Ross meeting with George Washington.
Why they actually picked them. I mean, there's meanings behind them, valor and all this other stuff. I don't know exactly the real, real reason why they actually purchased, you know, they decided to go red, white, and blue. I don't know that. I don't think it's tripped up a lot of times.
No, I don't. I'd be very honest with you. I'm trying to trip you up.
I think I know a lot, but sometimes I don't.
All we know about the Betsy Ross and George Washington meeting is a year after Betsy Ross dies, her grandson or her son writes an article in Ben Franklin's newspaper saying that my grandmother or my mother made a flag and gave it to George Washington.
Well, you know what? So we used to go to a lot of trade shows, and I'm in one in Orlando many years ago. And this gentleman stops by and says his name, and I forget his first name, but he said, "I'm such and such Annan." And I'm like, "Oh, interesting." And he gave us all this paperwork, and I brought it back to our president of our company, who's a sixth-generation direct descendant of an Annan. And he said, "This is all legit." He said that this guy knew more about the Annan business than he actually did. And this guy down in Orlando said, "We have some records that kind of imply that Betsy Ross sewed flags for us as in the cottage industry, you know, sewing at home." Mm-hmm. So that was pretty interesting. We get a lot of stories about where our products have been and stuff.
But you know something, they're all good stories.
There are great stories. I mean, you know, the funny thing is the two flags at the in front of the White House now, when Donald Trump put the two big flagpoles up there, they're ours. I didn't know that. Because we're wholesale, I didn't know that for about 3 or 4 days after, when our customer who supplied them called me and said, "Bob, you know those are Annan flags," and I didn't know that. Had no clue they were ours.
Do you make all? Do you strictly, or is it done by bid or contract? Do you still make a lot of POW MIA flags?
We do make a lot of POW flags.
Did you know Mary Huff? Did you know Mary Huff?
I did not know her. I think that was in 1972 or something, mm-hmm. And she visited.
And you were only 4 years old then.
I was two, yes.
Yeah.
I think I was just getting out of college then. Anyway, yes, and so, you know, so Annan helped design the flag, and it's still a huge, huge seller for us. It's got a lot of meaning behind it.
Yep, a lot of true meaning, and from what I understand, it's the only national flag made that's allowed to fly under the American flagpole, under the American flag.
That is true. There's another flag called Honor and Remember that is official in 29 states that has a lot of meaning behind it. It basically honors all fallen soldiers, all military people. I shouldn't just say soldiers.
You know, Mr. Prendergast.
It's got a lot of meaning behind it, too.
Yeah, Mr. Prendergast, I think it would be nice. I think we could twist his arm a little bit to come down that day, May 22nd. And be amongst, why wouldn't we want one of the greatest flag experts not be there to witness all these? And I would have to bet. Now, the Sanjour flag, Jim, is being made by Annan. The POW flag was made by Annan. I'm willing to bet you if we have 400 burial flags opened up that day, I'm willing to bet you half of them were made in Annan.
I will bet that's the case. You know, in fact, Bob, you know, we're putting a program book together for this event, And, you know, if you would like to, we give you a whole page in the program book to talk about the history of Annan and the flags and, you know, just the things we were talking about, what you were talking about the last few minutes.
Just get in touch with me and we'll chat about it. I'd like to make the trip down there. I think I'm only maybe 75 miles from you, up the Garden State Parkway. Of course, I feel like I'm about 6,000 miles away today in Siberia because it's so cold, but, you know, I can certainly make that trip down there.
By the way, you may have one of your Annan flags flying at the Super Bowl. I'll let you know on Monday.
Okay, please do. We don't always know where our flags are being displayed because, you know, we're wholesale only. But it's interesting because we certainly hear about the other ones.
You say your flags are on the poles outside the White House, and of course the POWMIA flag flies underneath the American flag on top of the White House. Do you know if any of your flags are, and I'm sure they are inside the White House or in the Capitol?
I'm quite sure they are. I know our reseller in the area does supply the flags to the White House, so I'm assuming that the ones flown over the White House are ours, the ones on top of the White House. I'm sure they are. I mean, our flags really have been all over the place, and it's really a testimony to Annan. You know, I've always said we're a footprint of American history, and I sincerely believe that. When you think we go back to 1820, when the country was, 44 years old back then, it was, you know, we have a lot of history behind us.
And Jersey's what, the second state to join the 13 original colonies? I think Delaware's first, New Jersey's second. And I'm sure we were flying flags for a long, long time here in New Jersey. And you're right up near Homedale, which is the home to the Vietnam Veteran Memorial Museum there. We fly a lot of flags up there. And Ralph, we only got a few minutes left that we're going to keep Jim and Ralph up, but you and Bill have any questions you want to ask, go ahead, Ralph.
Bob, I do. Do you have a museum or a room where it has some of these historical items listed?
No, we don't. You know, we've downsized our offices, and, you know, so we have some older historical flags in some of the factories and a couple in the headquarters in New Providence, but it's not really a museum per se. You know, you may see three of them in headquarters, and, you know, maybe they go back about 100-something years. But the closest one I really saw was the one that was on Lincoln's casket, which when we saw it back in early 2025 when they brought it to our headquarters in New Providence. No, they asked us to buy that flag, but really, other than our office, where nobody ever comes to, you know, it really didn't make sense for us to buy it. It really should be in the museum, and it was in the Museum of Southern History out of Florida, but they had to sell it because they had to pay for their new museum. But and I don't know who bought the flag, but it really didn't make sense.
Wait a minute. You're building a new museum and you sell the flag that was on Lincoln's casket? What the hell do you put in the museum after you sell the flag?
They had other stuff, but I mean, I think the flag sold for about over $600,000. And, So they needed the money to build a new museum, so they had to put it up for sale.
Is there any significant flag about, like, say, Vietnam that you remember that maybe somebody contacted you about a flag?
Are there significant ones? You know, I get calls probably every
couple
weeks.
And they're all significant. They're all important.
I get calls every couple of weeks or email like, hey, I have this flag, and, you know, it's 45 stars and all this stuff. And you know, of course, they never really tell me because they don't know. They've bought them at auctions or they've purchased them at a garage sale. And how much are they worth? And I'm like, well, what can you tell me about it? And, of course, I have a friend who's a expert on flags, which is called vexology, and I'd ask him, I said, how much do you think that flag is worth, Jim? And he would say, but somebody wants to pay for it, which is a great answer, you know. But you know what I often get asked, you know, about flag sales and stuff, and right now with the 250th anniversary of the United States, we are fortunate enough to have the license through America250.org for the official government-sponsored flag, which says America 250 on it, and a Betsy Ross edition, which has the circle of stars with 250 in the middle of the stars. And of all the flags that we've produced over the years, and all the special ones, this flag has sold greater than any flag other than the U.S. flag. The demands are through the roof for these flags right now. And I've got, you know, I'll talk to you guys later, and I'll get your addresses, and I'll send you some.
Yeah. Ralph, do you have a question that you'd like to ask?
No, I just appreciate it so much that...
Wait a minute, Ralph. You got to tell the flag story. You got to tell the flag story from the Annoy Hilton. Bob would love that. And everybody would like to hear that.
You mean the Mike Christian story?
Yes.
You may have heard it, but Mike Christian was a young Navy officer, was a roommate of John McCain.
Yeah.
And he, four guys in a room in a Hanoi Hilton, and Mike Christian one day decided to take a piece of his bamboo mat and sharpen it into a needle, and then started taking thread from his clothing and wherever he could find it, and he stitched a really crude but effective American flag on the inside of his POW pajama top. And every morning, he would take off his top, turn it inside out, and he and his roommates would salute the flag and say the Pledge of Allegiance. And it was really important when you were in captivity that flag and freedom meant a lot to you. Well, one day the North Vietnamese decided to raid the camp. They took his clothing, took him out, you know, beat the hell out of him all day, and then threw him back at night and told McCain and the other two guys, take care of him. If he lives, he lives. He dies, he dies. And they cleaned him up as best they could, and later that night, if they were going to sleep, they saw him huddled in the corner of the cell, which it's four guys in a cell that's about 10 by 10. It's not a lot of space. And they thought he was asleep, but it turned out that he had now started to find another piece of bamboo and started to craft another flag. And when asked about it when he got home, he said, I didn't do it for me. I did it. My roommates expected a flag the next morning to do the Pledge of Allegiance. So that's how important the flag is to what we do as service members. So thank you.
I've heard that story, but I had heard that it was John McCain that did it.
Now I'm going to
go check to see, but obviously this person was with McCain, and you're right, they took him out, they found it, took him out, beat the hell out of him, and that same night they were rebuilding it.
If you look up McCain, you'll find a script, but his script is about Mike Christian, the guy that actually did the flags.
Listen, just God bless everyone. Ralph, stay with us. Bob and Jim, we'll talk to you later on.
Okay, thank you very much, guys. Great talk.
Thank you, Joe.
Take care. Listening to the Welcome Home Show. We'll be right back.
Let's sing a song about New Jersey. Liberty's torch, the immigrant gate. A place to know, a place to grow. A place we call the Garden State. Yellow goldfinch and his mate make their nest in the Garden State. Horses on the farms, horses at the gate. They work and race in the Garden State. The honeybee's job is to pollinate the beautiful plants of the Garden State. So the violet flower can permeate the fields and trails of the Garden State. New Jersey, that's my home, New Jersey. Love to roam, sweet as a honeycomb. Shines like polished chrome, New Jersey. The Garden State, the fields and farms fill my plate, New Jersey. That's my home. Seafood lovers appreciate the oysters and clams of the Garden State. If you love brook trout, grab some bait. You can catch them in the waters of the Garden State. The knobwhelk shell reverberates with the sound of the shore at the Garden State. And saltwater taffy makes me salivate while strolling the boardwalks of the Garden State. New Jersey, that's my home, New Jersey. Love to roam, sweet as a honeycomb. Shines like polished chrome, New Jersey. Garden State, the fields and farms fill my plate. New Jersey, that's my home. Scientists and researchers innovate new inventions in the Garden State. Thomas Edison worked to illuminate the whole wide world in the Garden State. Factories and mills, they operate to make a stuff in the
garden state.
Campbell's Soup, who makes V8, started with tomato in the
garden state.
New Jersey, that's my home, New Jersey. Love to roam, sweet as a honeycomb. Shines like polished chrome, New Jersey. The garden state, the fields and farms fill my plate. New Jersey, that's my home. Statue of Liberty, red oak tree, blueberries, tomatoes, cranberries, M&M Band-Aids created here. The shore, the beaches, amusement pier, Lenape, they lived all around. Washington slept in Morristown. The Haddonfield Hadrosaurus ate Cretaceous vegetation in the garden state. Baseball started to captivate in 1846 in the
garden state.
The Rutgers of Princeton, they made the first date to play football in the
garden state.
Elizabeth White did cultivate and sell blueberries in
the garden state.
And stadiums now reverberate when Springsteen sings in
the garden state.
And all cars have a license plate, and most of them say the
garden state.
When I go through the pearly gates, I hope it's just like
the garden state.
Well, it ain't that great. New Jersey, that's my home, New Jersey. Love to roam, sweet as a honeycomb. Shines like polished chrome, New Jersey. The garden state, the fields and farms fill my plate. New Jersey, that's my home. New Jersey, the garden state, the fields and farms fill my plate. New Jersey, that's
welcome back, everyone. WIBT 398-1020, the Welcome Home Show. My name is Joe Griffiths. I'm here with Bill Davenport, Marine Vietnam veteran. On the line with us is our partner, Ralph Galati. 14 months Air Force shot down over Vietnam, 14 months in the Hanoi Hilton. And we have the honor of having the chairman of the board of trustees, Cooper University Healthcare MD, Anderson Cancer Center at Cooper, and chairman of Connor Strong and Buckley, if I'm saying that correctly, Mr. George Norcroft. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, thank you.
And thank you for taking the time out. You know, we've been going on the air 15 years. You're one guy I wouldn't have never dreamt of even asking to come on our show because you're so busy. You know, what does he want to be hanging around with us for on a Saturday afternoon? But thank you, thank you, thank you.
Glad to be here.
Yes. I have a couple early questions I would like to ask you. But, you know, you can go online today, Mr. Norcross, and you can find anything out about anybody. But there's two things I could not find out about you. And one was, when do you sleep and when do you eat? I mean, it seems like you run a lot of companies. You're responsible for a lot of things. You must work 24/7.
Well, I'm certainly available 24/7, and I try to be available anytime I'm needed for anybody who needs help or assistance or any of our business interests or our charitable or family interests.
You know, sir, can you tell us a little bit about your mom and dad?
Sure. My father was born and raised in Camden, New Jersey, and went to Woodrow Wilson High School and served in the military during the Korean War, and began a career as an electrical worker and served in that capacity until he ended up in Tennessee when he was fairly young and met a young woman from the Smoky Mountains who became my mother. And she moved north and had four boys. I'm the oldest. And she adapted a whole different life from back in the 1950s when she had experienced growing up in the Smoky Mountains. My mother was born in a log cabin in the Smoky Mountains, and she put herself through school after we got a little older, my brothers and I, and made a great career in her own capacity as a senior citizen coordinator in Camden County in southern New Jersey. My mom and dad had a wonderful, wonderful life together. My father unfortunately passed away fairly young when he was 69 years old many years ago. My mom lived considerably longer and passed away in 2016.
Where was your dad born at, sir? In Camden?
Camden, yeah.
Now, I thought so. Was he born in Cooper?
He was, and so was I. And, so
and
was
you were
brother.
Born in Cooper. And do you have any relatives that aren't born in Cooper?
None I can think of at the moment.
Now, and I think that's great, and I think I read where Cooper Hospital was important to you because you wanted a hospital in the city. You don't want people in Camden to have to travel to the suburbs to see a hospital. And that's why you wanted to build and flourish Cooper Hospital.
Well, I would say there were a couple of other reasons. Cooper Hospital was founded by the Cooper sisters, Mr. Cooper, but by his daughters. And they decided to form a hospital and create a hospital over almost 140 years ago. And its purpose was to provide health care regardless of a person's ability to pay, which was quite a novel concept given where we are in the world today and in the United States today over the debate of health care universally for citizens in America. My father served on the Board of Trustees before me. And he was one among a few other people who fought to keep Cooper in the city because some of the other hospitals, namely West Jersey Hospital, decided to move out of the city of Camden and move to Voorhees back in the early 2000s. And it was important to my father and to a lot, since Cooper was the anchor institution for the city for so many years and decades. And you'll recall, as is the case somewhat today, Campbell Soup Company, RCA Corporation, New York Shipbuilding Company. These were all big companies domiciled in the city. When I was a kid, I remember seeing the tomato trucks going up and down Cooper and Federal Street, bringing tomatoes into the plants to make tomato soup. And RCA Corporation was born in the city, and the building it occupied at 2nd and Cooper is still there today. So there's a great legacy that was involved. Cooper was always considered an academic tertiary care facility as compared to a community hospital. So it was important to all of us to maintain an anchor institution. And that continued during my almost 35 years on the Board of Trustees and as chairman of Cooper.
Mr. Norcross, if you didn't rebuild Camden, who would have?
Well, there's a great team of people that have been involved in this. Governor Christie and I and many of the other Democratic officials had a great partnership together. He cared much about the renaissance in the city. He believed it was possible to take place through a strong bipartisan effort. And after him, Governor Murphy had the same agenda. So we were unique in that probably one of the few parts of the state that were able to work on a bipartisan basis. And we believed that Camden had so many great assets that it could be turned around. And 15 years ago, it was America's most dangerous city, America's poorest city. Certainly a lot different today. We still have a long way to go. But we gathered together the corporate leaders, the community leaders, the religious leaders, the educational leaders, and those from the major entities, employers in the city, to come together to try and figure out how to focus on, first, public safety and public education, which are the two most important things government needs to provide for this, for its citizenry.
You know, Mr. Norcross, you're not the first Norcross to be on our show. I'm very good friends with your brother, Congressman Donald Norcross. And if I could share a fast story, we were doing our show in the Battleship, New Jersey, a few years ago. And your brother called me and said, can you come up? We want to do a big health fair for veterans and do your show. I said, of course. So we're about 10 minutes before going on the air. We're all set up, and I had to get something out of my car, and I go down the gangplank off the, and they let me park my car right near the ship. And your brother's getting out of his car. He said, Joe, I made it. He's waving his hands up in the air. He said, I chipped a tooth last night in Washington. I came up early this morning, told the dentist, I have to be out of the chair by 1 o'clock to be on Joe's show at 2 o'clock. I mean, you guys are so down to earth. And with that day on that ship, we had four doctors from Cooper Hospital, maybe five, neurosurgeons, orthopedic doctors, that all did two, three tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. Cooper Hospital trains doctors for the military and nurses to what to be prepared for, how to deal with situations at makeshift MASH units in the fields, in the jungles of Iraq, Afghanistan. Cooper has extended their arms all over the world, especially on military bases, when training. You know, you may be a surgeon at Cooper, but now all of a sudden you're a surgeon in Iraq that just came from Cooper. That training they get you helps to save a lot of lives. How important is it, Mr. Norcroft, for great, great health care for our veterans and all people? But I'm asking this one on veterans. How important is that to you?
Well, it's very important. We've had a long, long tradition at Cooper with being involved in the military, being involved with our veterans, and in particular, probably going back 15 years ago or so, it came to my attention something I really didn't know, which was that our veterans in the seven southern counties were pretty much forced to go across the bridge, pay a toll, go to the Veterans Administration hospital, probably have to wait. And I was incensed when I heard that. And I said, I'm a good reason and blessed to be able to do what I do in life because of veterans, particularly World War II veterans who are still in our community, and veterans of Vietnam, veterans of every conflict we've ever had, but particularly World War II. But not for them, I wouldn't be in the place I'm in today, and many of us wouldn't be. So I decided to take it upon ourselves and consulted with our board of trustees and our leadership, and we decided to create a veterans program and advertise it and tell veterans all over South Jersey, you come to Cooper, we guarantee you priority service, same day service. I don't care whether you have the ability to pay or not. You deserve to be treated as a hero. And we've enacted that program and have that program to this very day. And we ask our veterans not to bother with going to the Veterans Administration. Come to Cooper. You go to the front of the line. You deserve it. We should be applauding and respecting and honoring you for what you've done for us. And it affected me personally, thinking all these years, had it not been for these veterans, that many of whom gave their lives for our country, I'm not particularly happy with the way America treats its veterans. I don't think they treat them with the priorities and the respect and the honor that they deserve. As far as I'm concerned, they should go to the front of the line every place they ever go in life, whether it's a restaurant or a hospital or a job. And we need to be doing more and more for our veterans. And one of the things that we should be doing is allowing them to go to any hospital, any healthcare institution in the country. And frankly, don't stand down and waste your time going to the Veterans Administration. It takes too long. You shouldn't have to pay anything for it. And we have some of the greatest healthcare institutions in the world, right here in New Jersey, Eastern Pennsylvania. And our veterans should be able to walk in without regard to their ability to pay, and they should be given that kind of priority service.
Mr. Norcross, you recently purchased your organization, the Cape Regional, which is now Cooper Hospital down here in South Jersey. That is like bringing the Yankees or the Phillies to Cape May. I hope you understand that. To bring a first-class facility way down here that, you know, I say all the time, a reason a lot of politicians don't come to Cape May is they think we're part of Delaware. We're really down at the southern tip of Cape May, and now all of a sudden, big bright signs, Cooper Hospital has come. All of a sudden, more doctors, more nurses, more departments. Part of the hospital that was in darkness is now got, you can see lights on in the windows at night. I wanted to thank you for that. I'm 100% disabled. And when I need health care, going through community care is 9 or 10. One of the reasons the budget at the VA is so big, it's not on account of the health care they're providing. It's on account of all the clerical 9, 10 phone calls to get just blood work done, to get approval, to go to your hospital to get blood work done. On any given day when I go to Philadelphia VA, sir, I pass by two zoos and a big animal lover. I pass by two prisons and 10 hospitals to go to the VA. Why can't I get out of my bed, put on my shoes, and drive 2.25 miles to your hospital and get great service?
Well, you can. You can and you should. Then just go ahead. Show up. You'll be treated as a hero because you deserve to be.
Yes. Listen, we got to go to a fast break. I promise it's only going to be short. And we want to bring you back. I would like to talk about the importance of children to the Norcross Foundation and to the family. You're listening to Welcome Home Show. We'll be right back.
You, who are on the road, must have a code that you can live by. And so, become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by. And feed them on your dreams, the one they fix, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry. So just look at them and sigh, and know they love you.
While New Jersey public schools have yet to fully rebound from the pandemic and reach pre-COVID test scores, some schools in Camden have shown recovery and even improvement. According to a Camden Educational Fund analysis of the scores for English, language, arts, and math tests not only rebounded in the city of Camden, but they resonated to be some of the highest in the state.
Their children's health will slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they fix, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry. So just look at them.
Welcome back, everybody, as we do each week. Today being February 8th, we announced the birthdays and the casualties on the Vietnam Memorial Wall in Washington, D.C., and Wildwood, New Jersey, and numerous other locations throughout the country. Today, there'll be 134 birthdays, three of those from New Jersey. Casualties will be 213, all four from New Jersey. You'll notice the end of January, early February, is the most casualties, and that was historic through the 17 years of the Vietnam War. No local men this week, which is very fortunate for the second week in a row.
Yeah. Thank you, Bill. Mr. Norcross, your children program is unbelievable. You really start children at an early age. How important is that?
Well, I would tell you, for any parent who understands the development of their own child, that if you do not discover or catch a learning difficulty by the time a child is at least three, the likelihood is they're going to have an impairment most of their life. And that would include sight, hearing, developmental, or otherwise. And it's so important to have an early intervention. In New Jersey, intervention programs typically start at age 5, and only if a teacher or a parent requests it. We decided to implement and fund a program in Camden with some of the public schools and Renaissance schools and the Catholic schools, of which I have a partnership with, to test children at age 3. Because it's difficult enough coming from an urban setting to get the kind of quality education that you would want, let alone being certain that if there's any kind of issue that's going on in your life, it's a mandatory engagement with your parents and the teachers. So parents have embraced this enthusiastically, as you can imagine, and the teachers likewise have. It would be really great, as Governor Murphy said when we announced the program, that this be done in the entire state of New Jersey. Because if a child is left behind by age 5 or age 6 with some kind of developmental or hearing or sight impairment, the likelihood is they're not going to recover. And that's why this type of thing, early intervention. I was reading last week that Governor Sherrill is contemplating engaging a new cabinet officer for early childhood, which I think is incredibly important and a great priority to consider.
That should be you. She should appoint you. You could fit in another job, can't you?
we got our hands full in Camden, and that's where I grew up, there in Pensauken, and we're doing everything we can to advance the interests of that community. It's given me so many blessings in life and so many opportunities. I started my business there in 1979 at 514 Cooper Street in the basement. So I've never forgotten where it came from.
No, and it proves you where you live and where you work and where you grew up, your family, your dad, all your brothers. You know, if I was going in business tomorrow and I had a lot of money, do you know who the first employee I would hire?
I have no idea.
Jane Tubbs.
She's the best.
Isn't she your senior executive assistant? She is absolutely fantastic. She really is. And
She sleeps less than me. Believe me.
Yeah, and I'm sure she called you this morning to remind you of being on the show today, and she might have dialed the number for you. I don't know, but just...
She did remind me at least 3 times, I can tell you that.
She's just a nice, nice lady.
Wonderful.
The schooling, you know, I a lot of people think, well, if we're feeding kids in school, it's a waste of money. They should come. They should come to school. Their parents should feed them. Why should we be paying tax dollars feeding kids? Kids learn better when they're not hungry. How important are food programs? I think food programs are just as important in our schools as teachers teaching math. A kid's not going to learn if he's hungry. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I'm a basic believer in focusing on basic things. A few moments ago, I talked about Camden. And what did we focus on 13 years ago? Public safety, public education. Things like health care. Things like hunger, proper nutrition. These are fundamental, basic things that we need to be focusing on and do them right. And every child, every citizen of this country should have comprehensive health care from birth, should be able to have great nutrition from birth, and should have and be able to live in a great community that has wonderful public safety and public education. These are basic human services that government should be providing and enabling every family. Because, look, not every family is blessed to have a mom and her dad. Not every family is able to financially deal with some of the issues that families face today. And obviously, if it's a family coming from an urban center that may not have the economic opportunity or otherwise that many others have, it's something that should be there and should be as part of what is done. Now, you know, I'm all for being prudent with taxpayers' dollars, but a healthy society is a better society, because ultimately, in the end, an unhealthy society is cared for by the government also, and the costs are quadruple, if not more, than what they'd be if they were provided preventative care and comprehensive care from birth.
You know, sir, my niece, who I love dearly, she graduated the University of Pittsburgh, and she always wants to do and work with kids and give back. So she majored in sign language and psychology, and she now teaches, works with children that have special needs, autism, that can't speak. And she teaches them sign language to be able to communicate. We have a lot of special needs, anger management children in the world, and especially in the United States. If we didn't have people like the company my niece works for and people like you wanting to take younger people to train them, the difference between what you're doing and somebody not doing it is the fact that when that person turns 17, 18, 19, they're ready to go to college when you train them, rather than hanging around on the corner and not being able to work or hold jobs or do drugs. When we teach them at a young age, like you're doing, like your plan is, number one, they're successful, and number two, they have a future. What you're doing is the children of Camden and in the area, you're giving a future back to those people, and I applaud you for that. I think it's really, really great. You have another program going on. That's this. Who is my neighbor? Faith, compassion, and shared responsibility. These programs that you're doing, you really include the community, too, because it has to be a whole bunch of people. You know, you have to build a village around these children to help them. Do you feel that's really important? You can't do it on your own, can you?
No. Well, last Monday night, we convened a meeting of almost 200 community leaders, religious leaders, public officials, corporate leaders, engaged in the city of Camden, because it was becoming very apparent that due to what's going on throughout the country with ICE raids going on, and people being deported and arrested who aren't necessarily violent criminals, that the community has become so frightened that the attendance rate in public schools in some urban centers, including Camden, are like 25%, because parents are afraid to send their children to school because they're afraid they may get confiscated and arrested and deported. The same goes with going to local businesses, leaving their homes. So we decided we were going to put together very quickly a whole team of healthcare counselors, legal counselors, social worker counselors, in order to help people in Camden in particular. And this is going to be expanded to Pennsauken and other communities in Camden County, because what's going on right now in the country has gone far beyond deporting violent criminals that are not citizens of this country. And I think the vast majority of Americans completely support that. If you're a violent criminal and you're here in America illegally, you should be thrown out, deported, never coming back again. But if you are a law-abiding person who's residing in this country, and you're probably not here completely legally, there should be a path to citizenship. That's what George W. Bush tried to pass when he was president on a bipartisan basis. And unfortunately, there were those in the right wing of the country that called it amnesty. Well, when you have 40, 50 million people that live here, brought their families here, seeking the American dream, and they're guilty of nothing more than trying to have a better life for their family, there has to be a better way to handle this than having trucks drive around and just pick people up indiscriminately, or match Medicaid lists of people that are not American citizens. Now, you could very easily say, if you're not a citizen, why should you be receiving benefits like a citizen that taxpayers fund? I think there's some merit to that. But there also, conversely, has to be a path to citizenship, meaning you need to pay a fine, earn the privilege of being a United States citizen, which is a privilege. It's not a right, it's a privilege. And it should be something that we should try to engage in. But so many parents are scared to death, their families are scared, that what's going on in our country that we're watching on television every day, of where, you know, those that are not violent criminals are being rounded up, put in jails. And I just don't think Americans in general support that. So we decided last week to try and protect our neighbors, help our neighbors, and be part of the community, because they deserve that.
You know, we could take that even one step further, that I think 3% of our soldiers that fought in Iraq, Afghanistan, come home and they're not citizens. They can join, they can go to war, they come home, they're not citizens. And in California, if they get stopped after doing three deployments, it could be 100% disabled veteran, and they don't have the proper ID on them, they just drive them right to the border and say, go back to Mexico.
There's a middle balance here.
Yes.
For a lot of things. Both Democrat and Republican presidents for decades and decades have allowed people to walk into America, and they should never have been allowed to do that from day one. There's a path that you need to follow to earn the privilege of being a United States citizen. And I encourage that, and I think that's a good thing.
Yes, it
is. But I don't think allowing over decades so many people to come to America to receive the American dream, to make their families better than perhaps where they were living in another country or Mexico or wherever the case may be. And then all of a sudden throwing these people out, I just think is wrong. But only if they're law-abiding, decent people living in our country. And, you know, the example you just used is somebody who put their life on the line for America, and America is thanking them by kicking them out of the country. That's obscene. That's outrageous. That kind of behavior. First of all, I would argue, why is someone going into the military that is not a United States citizen to begin with? I mean, that should be determined up front. And like I said, it's a privilege to be a citizen of America.
Sir,
and everyone should be given.
We want to hold you over for another few minutes, if you don't mind. There's a couple more important subjects that I know are near and dear to you. Plus, someone's on the phone. A good friend of yours wants to say hello to you. But we got to go to a fast break. You're listening to the great George Norcross. He's got too many titles to give them all. I guess the best title that I can apply to him is he just opens up his heart. His feelings, he never forgot where he came from. He donates to hundreds and hundreds of charities, and he worries about the children, and he's worried about guys like Bill, me, and Ralph on the phone, that we're veterans, that we have the best health care. You're listening to Welcome Home Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. WIBG 398-1020, the Welcome Home Show. Amy Osborne, are you with us?
I'm here, Joe. How you doing?
Fine. Would you say hello to Mr. Norcross, please?
Hi, George. How are you today?
I'm doing good. I bet it's pretty cold where you are.
Yeah. I'm looking out the window at the snow right now and the wind, and I bet it's pretty nice where you are.
Amy, how important is it that we're blessed? You know, a lot of people, I don't think a lot of people realize that New Jersey was the second state to join the original 13 colonies. Now we had Delaware. We came, mm-hmm. New Jersey was a colony before, they joined the Union before Philadelphia, before New York, before Pennsylvania, I should say. So we've been around a long time, haven't we, Mr. Norcross?
We have.
You know, and being right across from Philadelphia, you know, I got a phone call from Cape Atlantic Community College. I hope I'm saying that right. Bill's a graduate from there. And they asked us, would we promote a course that would be free for veterans to talk about leadership roles? And it was really a course they put together so that we get veterans as they're getting older to still read and write and get involved, get engaged with the community. So I'm looking, I said to my wife, isn't this a great program? She said, Joe, why don't you take the course? I said, yeah, it sounds pretty good. And I took the course, and we had a guest speaker like the third week. And first of all, the professor said, does anyone want to take a ride to Red Bank and visit an historical area? And I said, well, I didn't feel really driving 100 miles up the parkway to visit Red Bank. A few people went, and then they had the curator of the park one. And I found out that it was Red Bank in Gloucester County. a very historical park that made a difference during the Revolutionary War. They would cut down trees, they would shave them into points, so when the British ships would come up the Delaware, their ships would get damaged, and they were actually a protector of the city of Philadelphia. I never knew that park, and I've been to it since, even existed in Gloucester. It's such an historic place. Mr. Norcroft, how can we better promote New Jersey? We got the greatest beaches in the world. We're access to some of the greatest sports events, whether they be in North Jersey, Philadelphia, New York. I mean, we're really in a prime place to live. How can we do a better job promoting this state of New Jersey?
I think the state itself has to start promoting like they did under Governor Kaine. We have a new governor who makes a terrific profile. And I think if it were me, I'd be putting her on television, starting to promote the state of New Jersey, because I think she has great credibility. She served our country in the military. She's a mother of four children, and she's now our governor. What better face to talk about New Jersey than her? And you're right, we have a lot of amazing things. We have the best health care in the United States here in New Jersey, from one end of the turnpike to the next. We have a lot of great natural resources. But I would say you are correct in that New Jersey does not promote itself very well, and probably hasn't since the days of Governor Kaine.
Amy, I know you would like to invite Mr. Norcroft up to Homedale Memorial Museum, so why don't you talk about that?
Well, when you're talking about New Jersey, I can't help but think about the Vietnam Memorial, because it's the only one of its kind in the nation, and it's right here in New Jersey. And we still have some people local to the memorial and the museum who don't know about it. So I've told George about the memorial and the museum, and I think you've indicated that you're eager to come up and pay us a visit and see what we're all about, and we're excited for you to do that. A great opportunity for that would be on March 10th. We're going to be having the premiere of our latest documentary short film, which is called The Last Patrol. And The Last Patrol tells the story of 16 Vietnam veterans who came together and rubbed all of the names of New Jersey's veterans down in D.C., put the names in a box, put all the rubbings in a box, and walked from D.C. to New Jersey to the site of the future New Jersey Vietnam Memorial. And that was the impetus behind building and creating the Vietnam Memorial here in New Jersey. And so documentary filmmaker and Oscar winner Vanessa Roth has done this film for us, and we're really excited to debut it and premiere it in our museum on March 10th. So, George, I invite you to come up for the premiere if you're in town. And Joe, thank you for always promoting our memorial and our museum. Joe, you're on the board of trustees. You're one of our most valuable trustees. So we love having you on our team, and you're the biggest voice out there for Vietnam veterans. So thank you.
Amy, it's always easy to promote great things. Look what, you know, Mr. Norcross, I used to say to your brother, we were interviewing him on the battleship New Jersey, and he had just come back from his tooth was chipped, and he left the dentist chair to be on time for our show. And I said to him, I said, Mr. Norcross, are you violating the law in Camden? And he looked at me. I said, yeah, Congressman, isn't there a law that you can not only have so many cranes building high-risers at any given time? I said, do you have every crane in the world working in Camden? Because, I mean, you've turned Camden around from a heavily on the news every night shootings, killings. Sir, how many major companies have now moved to Camden? Any idea off the top of your head?
Probably 20 or 30 large employers have moved to Camden and call Camden their home, including my company. Our national headquarters is now located in Camden. We moved from Cherry Hill. NFI, which is one of the largest trucking and logistics companies in America, is in Camden, their national headquarters.
There are a variety of other companies that have now located there.
Car dealerships.
Cooper is the largest employer of Camden citizens. We just went over 1,000 Camden citizens. We eagerly try to hire people that live in the city and give them an opportunity, beginning in high school, actually, in apprentice programs during high school.
Sir, how could we help you? I sit also on the board for Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield for veterans. We have a program. It's called Soldier Salute. Instead of me, like I said before, making 8 or 9 phone calls to get to the VA. And I'm not saying that the VA is bad health care. It's just bad traveling to get to there. You know, I got to go over the most dangerous highways in the world. Route 42, the Walt Whitman Bridge, the Schuylkill Expressway, the Vine Street Expressway, just to get health care. And then they get there and they turn around and say, you know, your pressure's high. Well, I just traveled over 4 or 5 of the busiest highways in the world. Our Blue Cross Blue Shield program is that a veteran on Medicare. This is so simple. Last year, the VA spent $31 billion in just letting veterans use community care service. Why can't Cooper, Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield, the Welcome Home Show, and we'll even include Amy, get together and say to Doug Collins in Washington, instead of Joe having to make 9 phone calls, I just make 1 to a dermatologist or walk into Cooper Hospital and say, I'm here. Same day, same time, eliminate all them phone calls, all that extra clerical work and approvals and all that. I think we have solutions for veterans' health care if they would just listen to us.
Look, there's an easy solution to this. And I outlined it at the beginning of your show. And actually, my brother Donald introduced legislation in Washington to perfect a program like this. The Veterans Administration has outlived for healthcare its usefulness. It was probably a worthwhile institution after World War II. Today, America has the greatest healthcare institutions almost anywhere. Allow a veteran to walk into any healthcare institution of their choice, and present their card that they are a priority veteran hero. In Cooper, you get automatic same-day service. You probably don't have to pay to park. You will see your physician or get guidance instantaneously. This is how we should be treating our veterans. And it's real simple. Go wherever you want, get the care you want. You don't have to drive over a bridge, pay a toll, wait. You should be treated with the utmost of respect. And I can tell you, that is our policy at Cooper. And if you, tomorrow morning, or Monday morning, call Cooper and say, I'm a veteran, you're going to be treated with the honor that you deserve. It's that simple. It's not complicated here.
Can I like to explain something to people that are listening. And we've been on the air, I think next week or the week after, Bill and Ralph, we start our 15th year. And I always say, not too bad for me being a dumb Vietnam veteran that they sent to Vietnam because they said I wasn't smart enough to go to college. But I think one thing that we have to do with Cooper down here is everybody... Growing up down the shore here, I bought a home in Seattle when I came back from Vietnam. And you always heard, if you need surgery, you got to go to Philadelphia. You got to go to Jefferson. You got to go to Temple. You have to go to Penn. Sir, over the years, times have changed. We now have we have at Cooper down here. And, of course, you're almost Philadelphia, up in Camden, Cooper. But we have top-notch doctors that are working in our hospitals down here. You don't have to go to Philadelphia to get a knee done, to even get your heart done. You perform every service that a person living down the shore needs. How can we better help you to promote your hospital to let people know they don't have to drive 100 miles up, 100 miles back, because they can get the same care down here from you at Cooper? How can we help you with
that? We've been doing that on Philadelphia television for about a year now. Now, you've got to remember, for decades, Cape May County in particular, and parts of Atlanta County, didn't enjoy the top docs, the top nursing,
the top facilities that now are in progress of being put into place. I mean, you can go to Cape Regional now and you can receive MD Anderson services, the number one cancer institute in the world. And you could be transferred to Camden to have any kind of tertiary care service provided to you. So all of this takes time, but we are spending millions of dollars promoting. I thought what you were going to talk about is our Hero Connect program, which is our military veterans program.
Tell us about it.
There's a joint venture between Cooper and Deborah. This is the program I was just describing. We take care of veterans instantaneously. They are the marching orders of our board of trustees. Any person who identifies themselves as a veteran is given priority instantaneous service, regardless of their ability to pay. We owe that to those veterans as American citizens. They provided, as I said at the beginning of your show, but not for World War II veterans, I would not have the opportunities and blessings I have in life. America has to learn that it owes a debt of gratitude and not a half-assed service for our veterans, like you've described, having to wait weeks, having to make multiple phone calls. I like nothing better than having a veteran come up to me and thank me and say, I really appreciate you giving veterans a priority service that we deserve. That makes you feel good, and it makes you also recognize we're doing the right thing. These people literally provide it for our lives and our parents' lives.
Can you tell us briefly about your three brothers?
My brother John, second brother, I'm the oldest, is the academic in the family, exceedingly bright and very well educated, has been at the University of Scranton for probably 30 plus years, heading the psychology department. He's an author. He's written many, many books in his field. He travels the world speaking on subject matters of his expertise. My brother Donald, as you know, is, I think, the only electrician in the United States Congress. And Donald represents the Camden, Gloucester, Burlington County District. He literally has been an electrician all of his life until he got elected to the Congress. And now he serves in that capacity. My youngest brother, Philip, is the managing partner of a large South Jersey law firm called Parker McKay. And all of us, as I have pointed out repeatedly, have been amazingly blessed by a wonderful mother and father, and blessed by being citizens of the United States of America.
And you are a prime example of you didn't go back home. You always stayed at home. That if you live in a community, whether it's in Philadelphia, New Jersey, or Cheyenne, Wyoming, you owe your town something, the town that you were born in, the town that you grew up in. Go back and help it if it's hurting, help it if it needs help, and you'll be surprised. And if ever you think it's impossible, just go on the website and read about Camden, New Jersey, what the Norcross did, and a bunch of other people to really inspire. People 20 years ago couldn't get out of Camden fast enough. Now they can't get into Camden fast enough. Everybody wants to go to Camden. Listen, God bless you, sir, for taking time out with us guys on Saturday. You give us inspiration knowing that there are people out there like you that care about the service that we get, and as we're getting up in ages, the health care that we need. And I just want to let you know I'm always around, and Bill and Ralph, if there's anything that we can ever do to promote you, anything you're doing, if you need us to show up, if you need us to knock on doors or help tutor kids, we're there for you, sir. All you got to do is ask.
Thank you. I'm honored to be on your program, and we're here to help your veteran colleagues 24/7.
You got it. God bless you, sir. God bless you, Amy.
Thank you.